Good afternoon. I will call to order the House Environment and Water Committee. It's Thursday, March 19th, and we are posted for an informational meeting to hear from two members of the British Parliament. Unfortunately, they are due to catch a flight and have to leave the capital at 3:15, and because they're not here, I'm guessing they are still with the governor. So we will not be hearing from our members of Parliament. Several members of this committee had the opportunity to talk with them at lunch. It was an interesting and robust conversation about climate change, and we were certainly honored by their visit. Representative Jensen.
Am I correct that the gentleman from the England were making some sort of noise about a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit?
Representative Jensen, you are correct. In fact, it was one of their proposals for how to very quickly and effectively deal with carbon emissions, and I have said before, and I will say again, I'm right with you on it. I'll sign on to your bill.
Well, it should get referred to this committee, I think. I would hope so. But the chair might, you know, ask the speaker not to do anything foolish like that.
I wouldn't want to prejudge the outcome of a speaker's decision on where to refer that bill. Representative
Chair.
Jensen. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move we adjourn for the purposes of watching the NCAA basketball
They're not seconds in Masons, right?
Right. Well, perhaps we'll be out of here quickly, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We'll see how this goes. Let me open up a public hearing on House Bill 2184. We have a sign-up sheet. And I'll ask folks, the purpose of this public hearing is primarily to take testimony on the amendments which have been circulated, and we're very interested in getting feedback on these proposed amendments, and particularly interested in testimony related to amendments that do not deal with things that we discussed when we held one of either of the two previous hearings on this bill. So if you have testified, for instance, in opposition to the inclusion of wine and liquor in the list of expanded products, then we could assume, I think, that you would support removing those products from the bill and therefore would support the Dash 10 amendments and Dash 1s and 2s, which also deal with that issue. So I guess I'm asking in the purpose, for reasons of efficiency, that we try to limit testimony to the proposals that we have not yet had an opportunity to hear testimony on. Let me remind the committee that the underlying bill, 2184, does several things. It would expand to additional product, sports drinks, juices, teas, wine and liquor, just about all beverage containers not currently covered under the bottle bill, in 2013. It would raise the deposit to a dime in 2011. And it's a pretty simple bill. That's kind of at the heart of what it does. We have amendments that, and I guess the third important piece of that is that it sets a target of 80% redemption rate that would take effect in calendar year 2015. That's at the heart of the underlying bill. We have 10 amendments up through the Dash 10s in front of us today, and I'm going to ask I'm going to ask several people to come up and speak to different amendments, and I'll start with Bob Danko, who's going to talk about the Dash 6s, Dash 7s, and Dash 8s. So we will get testimony, I'm sure, on many of these and try to be clear about where we're going. Beth has prepared a summary overview, which you should all have. Are they in the packets? They were emailed, and we'll get copies to you here, which summarize each of the 10, so you know what we're looking at. But let's start with Bob to speak to the Dash 6s, the Dash 7s, and Dash 8s.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environmental Quality. The dash sixes, the dash sevens, and the dash eights are our DEQ amendments, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about them. The dash sixes are, in our minds, a must-have amendment. Under the bill, we are, DEQ is to determine the return rate, the redemption rate for beverage containers, and there's a goal in the bill, and it's information I think everybody wants and everybody needs to know for planning purposes and for implementation purposes what the return rate is. The dash six provides us with the information so we can determine that rate. So it's a reporting amendment. It calls for annual reporting. It allows reporting by group of distributors, meaning the statewide co-op could report for the group of distributors. It has the regular confidentiality clause that a lot makes sure that we don't release that information. It allows us, of course, to aggregate that information statewide. So it's not a complicated amendment, but I consider it a must-have amendment. Is that good enough?
Can you, Bob, talk about how, if and how they relate to the 80% target in the bill?
Okay. The bill calls for DEQ, Section 1 calls for DEQ to determine annually the return rate for beverage containers. It also has a goal of 80% for 2015. And so we need this information so then each year we can determine the redemption rate, the return rate, and see where we are as compared to that goal. And as you know, there's another amendment that deals with the goal and the 10 cents. But this amendment is really strictly a reporting amendment that will allow us to make that determination of annually what the return rate is.
Great. You want to go on to the dash sevens?
Okay. The dash seven amendments evolved out of us, you know, finally concluding there is nothing in the bottle bill law that says out-of-state containers can't be redeemed. We talk about that being a problem, not necessarily a statewide problem, but a problem for communities along the border with Washington and Idaho, bringing containers out of state and redeeming them here. But there's nothing in state law that refers to that. So the first section of the Dash 7 Amendment, you know, says basically you can't redeem containers if you know that they were purchased out of state. The second section of the bill has to do with OLCC and civil penalty authority. It's right now, if OLCC wanted to enforce the section above that I just talked about out-of-state containers or anything else, they would have to use what I call a criminal process, a misdemeanor process to do any enforcement. And it's very common for state agencies to not use the local DA system, the misdemeanor system, and so on, but to use civil penalties as the ultimate enforcement tool. Now, nobody thinks that there's going to be much enforcement or enforcement on bringing in out-of-state containers, but it's important to have the in the law you shouldn't bring in out-of-state containers for redemption, and if you do, and of course, you know, you go through the whatever long process, you eventually have the tool to enforce it. So that's dash seven, two parts.
Any questions on the dash seven? Yeah, Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did I hear you correctly say that nobody thinks it's going to work? Is that what I heard you say? Nobody thinks that this is going to work, but what good, why do we have it?
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Representative, Mr. Chair. I didn't mean, if I said that, I didn't mean it wasn't going to work. What I meant is that in a case like this, and I've worked for our state agency for 30 years, you probably won't end up doing much enforcement because just having it there is enough to help make it work. So it's not going to end up being, I don't think it'll end up being a big civil penalty process. But I think you need that tool because, if you can identify the abuse, then you can make it work if you have these tools.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up, Representative.
As I understand it, the cans that come out of Idaho right now and into Oregon can't be identified as Idaho cans unless you see them pick the can up out of an Idaho store and drive it into Oregon. because there's no way to identify an Idaho can from an Oregon can. Is that true?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm probably not the person to ask, but I think you're correct.
A follow-up? And, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Benz,
then my question is, what good is this law, this amendment? If I can't tell an Idaho can from an Oregon can, how can I possibly use this amendment?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative, in any kind of enforcement, you can track back, you can do your research, you can find, and through typical enforcement investigations, you might be able to determine that someone was knowingly doing this, and probably if they're doing it in a big way, they're leaving footprints along the way, and you can track that stuff down. I don't enforce things like this, but I think that it's not too much different than other enforcement that an agency would do. But you can't do it if you don't have the tools to do it.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Benz, I was with you and then it occurred to me, one of the scenarios we considered was sort of the Seinfeld scenario, right? Fill up a truck and go. I think you're absolutely right that this would have no impact on, well, I don't want to say no impact, limited impact on the typical case of somebody heading, you know, from Vancouver with a bag and doing it. But it might deter behavior. It might deter, you know, sort of the absurd, huge profit-making behavior. I don't know. That was one thought that occurred to me in case we want to do this amendment.
And I, just a comment on this, and it was on the task force. We talked a lot about fraud. It had a subcommittee go off and investigate it. Then I know Representative Smith did the same. There's not an easy answer to this. This is as maybe as good as anything that I've seen discussed. It makes it sort of clear in big, you know, letters, $5,000 fine, and may have a deterrent effect. But I think it's pretty clear to me that we will continue to still have some issue,
sure,
with cross-border redemption. Do you want to move on to the dash eights?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Dash 8s deal with improving redemption. And this is something that I think is very important, and I hope the committee gives it serious consideration. I think there's general consensus that the present redemption process has become a big problem for the public and for the big grocery stores. And I think a lot of the concern of the public has to do with the existing process, with the machines and the wait times and the how they don't work. And I think we all know ourselves or know people that have given up on that process, give their containers to somebody who's willing to go through that process or recycle them at the curb, hopefully, or in a lot of cases don't recycle at all. And the return rate has dropped and reflects that public dissatisfaction. Redemption centers, complemented by a return to grocery stores, is really the solution for this, to provide the public with the convenience that it really deserves. And the way redemption centers will work, and I think there's general consensus on this, that they'll take the larger amounts, they'll be designed for the larger amounts, and it'll make it convenient to redeem larger amounts in containers, be it if you're a person who likes to save them up in your garage, or if you're a person who does it for a living, or if you're a Boy Scout troop or a high school club. Redemption centers are going to really make it easy for you to redeem containers, and I think that's what it's all about. Along with that, if you can have what I call a reduced or small return to grocery stores, then you've got that dual system where somebody who wants to just go to the store where they buy the containers and only have a few, if you remove the big volumes away from that, all of a sudden you have nice convenience and an easier route for the grocery store. Okay, so the next step is, why don't we have a statewide system of redemption centers? And part of it is we need a streamlined process for that to happen. We have a willing a willing entity, the state distributor co-op, who wants to do redemption centers statewide, but we have an existing law that OLCC implements, and they do a good job implementing it, but it's an existing law that is cumbersome and costly and slow, and it leaves OLCC doing pretty detailed rulemaking at some point, or trying to determine a process where it's not just one by one by one to try to establish a statewide system of redemption centers. OLCC has no direction on how to define convenience. California has tried this, and I don't think we want to do the California approach, but they say convenience is a redemption center within 1/2 mile of every store or every large store. Well, if we went that route, we'd have hundreds of redemption centers, and I don't think there's enough money to pay for them. So the bottom line is, if we can put together a process that allows the statewide distributor co-op to do redemption centers statewide, we can really help the public in returning containers and bringing back the return rate to where it should be. So the amendment, -8, does a few things, not too many things, a few things. It establishes that distributors are going to be the ones to be responsible for the statewide redemption center network. It gives the organization, in this case the co-op, the authority to do it for them. It gives state sanction to that co-op for antitrust conduct claims or anti-competitive conduct claims. The co-op hasn't asked for that, but our attorneys say that they should have it, or they may need it. It allows the organizations to use unredeemed deposits to build these redemption centers, and it allows then, once redemption centers are in place, allows the grocery stores to reduce their take-back to 24 containers. I call this a three-quarter loaf amendment. Everybody gets about three-quarters what they want. The co-op does the redemption centers. They want to do that. They get to use unredeemed deposits to do it. They want to do it. Other states are starting to grab those unredeemed deposits for the general fund. Connecticut just did it this year. And this state may not be far behind. So locking in that unredeemed deposits are used for redemption centers is a good idea. The stores don't get everything they want. I think, obviously, some of the big stores would like not to take back any containers, but 24 is a whole lot better than where they are now. And I'm really concerned about the medium-sized stores or the stores in rural areas or the locally owned stores, because they may not end up being part of a redemption center. They may still be stuck with 144. And so this is a package amendment. It gives everybody some of what they need, and it's something that I think the state really needs to move forward with the bottle bill. Now, I think people are cautious about this amendment, as the chair knows, and but I think we're not too far apart. And this is something that I think everybody wins a little and nobody loses a lot.
Questions on the -8. And this is a very new idea that we did not discuss at all in the last committee, so I hope that I expect we'll hear some more testimony on it, but I hope that we take advantage of Mr. Danko to make sure we understand what this amendment would do. Representative Gillian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Danko, for being here. When I look at the first paragraph, I wanted to ask you, this is on your reasons for improving. Are you surprised that it's become a big problem, inconvenient, dirty, broken? Is that something you anticipated, or is it, since 07 and is it 707? Senate Bill 707. Are you surprised by what's happened?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, this isn't a 707 problem. This is a problem that's evolved, say, over the last, I think, 5 to 10 years, and it's been building, and we feel it all the time at DEQ with the calls we get from the frustrated public. We feel it from just talking to our friends. We feel it from ourselves. I don't know how you redeem containers, but over the last 5 to 10 years, this problem of the public not being happy with the return system has grown. I don't think it's related at all to 707, which just kicked in a couple months ago. The numbers that we've looked at, the drop in the return rate was significant between 2005 and 2008. That predates 707 and the plastic water bottles. It's a mounting problem that will, you know, it's not one of those things that bursts forth. It just mounts and mounts, and it's, I think it's going to continue to mount.
Follow up. So system already had problems before 707. I wanted to, the chair alluded to this. If this is a brand new idea or... have you, these amendment dash eights, in context of the economy is my question. I thought maybe this emanated before the economic straits that we find ourselves in, but perhaps not.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, that's a good point, and I think that the economy probably is giving a little boost to the return rate. We won't know that, and John Anderson and the co-op won't know that for a while now, but I think everybody's feel is that we're going to get a little temporary boost out of the return rate. What's interesting is when you look at the numbers, it's dropped enough from 2005 till now that adding water bottles really won't bring the total being returned much back up past 2005. So it's not, you know, it's going like this. We add water and it goes up a little, but it's still going down.
Mm-hmm. One last follow-up. Mr. Chair, thank you. You mentioned the California model and the fact that you doubt we'd have enough money to model our neighbor to the south. Where does the money come from, and how much do you think is enough in this climate? There isn't enough to do the California. How much do you think is available?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, I think when Mr. Anderson presented his statewide industry approach to redemption centers in front of the Bottleville Task Force, he estimated, I believe, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, he estimated somewhere, I think, $15 or $16 or $18 million a year. And, you know, we think there's at least that much and probably more in unredeemed deposits. California funds their entire system, which is, you know, 2,500 maybe, amazing number of redemption centers off just unredeemed deposits. And that's it, of course, the unredeemed deposits go to the state, and the state then parcels it back out to run the redemption centers. What the Dash 8s avoid is the state being the capturing the money and then passing it back out for redemption centers. The Dash 8s allow the distributors to just keep the unredeemed deposits and do the redemption centers.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Any of these three amendments. Thanks, Bob. Stick around. We may need you back up here, but appreciate the introduction to three of these 10. Let's go to Rick Winterhalter and Scott Clagg to talk to us about the Dash 5s. And Ralph Groner, if you would be on deck, perhaps. We're going to go into some more.
Mr.
You
Chair.
Can sit up here, and we'll start with them, and then on you. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rick Winterhalter, Association of Oregon Recyclers. And in talking a little bit about, I think Mr. Danko just alluded a little bit to the amendments in Dash 5 about requiring stores to take an additional or to reduce the number from 144 that they're currently taking to 24 containers. We think that's reasonable. We think we need to maintain some convenience for the, you know, a regular consumer like ourselves versus somebody who's doing, you know, the fundraising efforts and taking in or trying to make a living, as Mr. Danko alluded to, back to the stores. So it does go in kind of in hand with redemption centers. Being available to offer that convenience for those larger amounts, but we think that we still need to maintain some convenience for consumers.
Thanks. Scott.
Chair and members of the committee, I think we also This was in the context of, this is for an amendment if the, not dash, 8 goes forward, but if the current system continues, wherein the OLCC has the ability to do redemption centers. We just want to say that if they decide to go ahead under the, you decide to go ahead with the law as it currently is under the current system, this would maintain, as in dash 8, a return of 24 to the system. So that's why we're here, to say we supported that during the task force days. We came up and we thought that maintaining return to retail was necessary to maintain the convenience of the system for Oregonians. We also just wanted to make a quick comment that in terms of the other amendments, we think removing wine and liquor under dash 1, dash 2, or dash 10, we still feel pretty strongly that maintaining those is important. Adding those into the system really helps the curbside system and getting glass off, but that's, we won't, we're still on record of keeping that in there even with, so we don't support those amendments.
Scott, will you identify yourself for the record, please?
I'm sorry. My name is Scott Clagg. I'm legislative chair for Association of Oregon Recyclers.
Okay. And before we go on to Mr. Garner, could we see if there are any questions on the on any of the issues that they raised related to the dash fives or the wine and liquor? Seeing none.
Okay.
You guys are excused. Mr. Garner.
Can you get out? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of this committee, my name is Ralph Groner, representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Three locals are involved in this, so I'm really speaking in their behalf. DEQ is 30, Local 3336, my members. Metro, also an AFSCME member, and so is OLCC. So my interest, I remained out of this until the amendments were done, so I hadn't testified before, primarily because they're my locals, and I needed to be clear. But I'll just save time and just say we support the amendments by DEQ 6, 7, and 8. And I'd just like to add one short quote that we support expansion of the bottle bill, and we really appreciate the wonderful work you've done, especially in the interim. I attended some of those. And I just, my thought is, I just talked to the average people in the building around on this, and they say a nickel and even a dime is worth zip. We just need to get to an incentive that really makes sure people will take those bottles in. And they may well do it with this economy. We need to move forward this session. And we believe this is a reasonable bill, that we need action on this, and doing nothing is not an option. The public needs and deserves an improved bottle bill.
Thank you.
Thank
Questions
you.
For Mr. Grody? Thanks.
I have a question for Mr.
Representative Grody. Gilliam.
Thank you.
Not so fast, Ralph.
Oh, you got who? Is it?
Now, it may not surprise you that I need to declare a family conflict, but it will surprise you that it has to do with Mr. Groner, because his wife is a cousin of one of my wife's cousins. And I have to ask you, cousin.
Yes.
What is a good price point that'll make a difference, in your opinion?
I haven't. Mr. Chair, relative Representative Gilliam, I have not. I just believe, personally, this is me, I think a dime is too low. You know, I would hope you'd at least get to 15 cents. I have a lot of bottles at my house, not for me, but members of my family that visit. And quite frankly, I give those to a Vietnamese fellow who's about 80, and he carries all these, and so now we take him. But I really think that we need to have an incentive, and your goal of 80% is going to require some, and you're working on that. You're going to a dime. I would hope you go a bit higher than that as quickly as possible. That's all.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go with Fawn McNeely on the dash nines, and let's bring Joe Gilliam and Paul Romain up as well.
Good
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Fawn McNeely. I'm here representing Waste Management and addressing the Dash 9 amendments. The most efficient method to collect redeemable containers is curbside. In Oregon, we have a system that generally makes it easy for customers to recycle this way. Economies of scale and ease for the consumer are important advantages to curbside recycling. Waste Management's solid waste collection market is primarily in Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington counties. They would like to find a way to migrate their diesel fleet to compressed natural gas, but the cost of conversion is significant and includes not only the cost of new trucks, but also the cost of fueling stations. Currently, Waste Management is operating CNG collection vehicles in Southern California and Seattle. In Portland, the commercial solid waste collection system is an open market with no exclusive franchises like in the residential market. If Waste Management does the right thing for the environment by converting to CNG trucks, arguably they will lose market share to various competitors who do not choose to convert their fleet. The Dash 9 amendments would allow solid waste collection companies to redeem the nickel attached to the cans and bottles they collect at the curb at redemption centers. We envision that the program only works if there are redemption centers. Collection companies would not be required to participate in the program, but would have it as an option. I've distributed a handout that shows you the various technology options for low-emission vehicles. I'd like to point out that CNG trucks, Waste Management would like to use, register at a level zero for both NOx and particulate matter output. By adopting the approach proposed in the Dash 9 amendments, we believe Oregon will enhance its already efficient curbside collection program and help the environment at the same time. Waste Management would encourage customers to recycle curbside and let them know that if they leave their containers at the curb, the money generated will go to new, greener technology. In the Dash 9 amendments, we have included a provision that allows franchise entities to audit collection companies to ensure the money they are collecting is going to pay for upgrades or new vehicles that are more efficient. A note on our amendments, we do believe we'll need an additional amendment to clarify that we would not have to sort the bottles and cans before submitting them to the redemption center. In closing, there's a lot of discussion around the bottle bill that focuses on what happens to that nickel. There are a lot of parties that would like to collect that nickel. We believe that our approach will establish a common sense solution that ensures the nickel is going to a program that will ultimately help the environment. Thank you.
Thank you. And before we move on, I give folks a chance to ask questions about the Dash 9s. I guess I'm not completely clear why this is necessary. Couldn't a hauler bring empty containers with a refund value to a, I guess we're talking about a sort of hypothetical redemption center, but couldn't they under current law collect the 5 cent per container?
Oh, Mr. Chair, they could bring the containers to the distributor, but then they would have to separate them out by a distributor, and there's a limit on the containers that can be brought to a grocery store. So our concern would be that if we don't establish this in law, there would be a problem. Redemption centers might limit the number of containers that could be returned. So we just feel like it's better to put this in statute now.
But you would need, it sounds like an important piece of that is the piece that's not in this version of the amendment, which is clarification that you would not be required to sort by container type or by distributor.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions on the Dash 9s? Okay, let's go ahead to Joe Ripple.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Joe Gilliam, representing Northwest Grocery Association, over 1,200 locations here in the state of Oregon, operating retail outlets. Let me give some general comments, and then I can address the different amendments if you'd like, Mr. Chair, just for comments on the amendments that are specific to each amendment. You know, as we look at these amendments and all the different ideas, you know, there aren't necessarily bad ideas, but when you're looking at how to get to your goals, I think the number one goal we heard in the task force was an 80% recycling rate. And frankly, a lot of these amendments would actually keep us from getting there. The biggest thing we have on the table right now for you is we know that at some point you're going to expand the bottle bill again. We get that. There's two ways to go at this point. I heard Mr. Danko talk about how people are unhappy. There is some happiness out there. It's a lot of work to come in and redeem your bottles and cans. But there's only two ways to go. One way is to go back to hand counting, and I can tell you how popular that's going to be. If you think the machines are slow, wait till we go to hand counting if you want to get rid of machines. The other way to go is to build capacity, and that's what we put on the table, we put it on the task force, and we're committed to. we put on a model of 90 redemption centers around the state that would be built, that would provide capacity for not only just the standard RVM practice, but also our model is to try to find the latest, greatest technology so people can come in and get out and get on with their day without having to stand and count cans. So we're working on that. So the biggest impediment to dash ones, dash twos, and the dash tens in terms of capacity, when you want to consider, there are arguments within wine bottles and distilled bottles and sports drinks that we could have at another time. But if you picked one or all three of those amendments, you wouldn't be able to handle it today, but we would be able to gear up for more capacity if we have redemption centers.
Sorry, let me clarify. Are you supporting or opposing the dash ones, twos, and tens?
At this time, we would oppose those because of the amount of volume that it would bring in. We couldn't do it in our operation today. What we need to do is be able to build the capacity ahead of you putting those in. We need to have the facilities to do it. And the biggest impediment to that right now is not anything in these amendments. It's getting approval to get them established. We could have started building redemption centers weeks ago, and we can't get this bureaucratic approval done to get there. We can put shovels in the ground. We can sign leases. I can bring my guys to the table because we're going to fund them. I don't know if most of you understand that, but the redemption center model is we're going to pay based on our sales. Every retailer who is a part of a redemption center is going to pay based on their sales to run the redemption center, and that money comes out of our pocket, not a tax or a – there's no subsidy. There's no – you know, there's no general funds going into our pocket. So when you look at these amendments as a whole, without the capacity and without the kind of the open door to start building these things, we're really – I mean, we're going to create – I'm going to say bottleneck.
I promised I wouldn't say that.
Joe, before you go on, I'm sorry to come back to this point, but I really do want to clarify. The dash ones, twos, and tens all deal with the question of which products are on the expansion list. And they do, the way LC wrote these, they sort of, you know, gut and stuff the bill with a substantially similar bill, but with a shorter list of products, which is why I'm interested, and you can help me clarify why you would be opposing amendments that if we adopted those into the bill, I can understand you might still oppose the bill, right, because it would result in this product expansion and an increase to 10 cents, but it would have the effect, unless I've misread or misunderstood something, adopting the ones, twos, or tens into the bill would have the effect of reducing the number of products that come online in 2013.
And Mr. Chair, that's I think what I said before was maybe to make myself clear, so I apologize, is I think you have to have a separate discussion on each one of those in terms of does it make sense to have wine bottles in the deposit system. It creates a wine bottle just by its physical nature creates problems within the system that we're trying to create in order to count and move people quickly through a convenient system. A different issue with distilled spirits because you have different containers, you have different sizes that aren't going to lend themselves to automatic counting because of the shapes, sizes, and all the spirit different sizes. You're going to have a lot of hand counting, so costs go up for the redemption center process and how we bring those through. For the sports drinks, there's some of those issues, but obviously they're a higher volume issue that are more closely related to water bottles and soda pop and beer that I think is a little bit of a different discussion.
So just my final question on this, just for clarification, the bill would be improved if it did not include wine and liquor on the list of expanded products. Again, I'm not asking for you to say would support the bill, but it would be at least marginally better bill if it did not expand to liquor and wine.
Mr. Chair, it would be in terms of volume, because instead of getting into the arguments of wine bottles versus liquor, which... bringing on any more volume, so the bill would be better without one, two, or ten.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Because we're trying to build the capacity. It's not. We're saying you should never expand the bottle bill. We realize that that's on the table and a recommendation of the task force. Our bigger issue is give us the chance and the freedom to build the capacity, so you can even consider these things. That's our biggest point on those.
You want to speak to any of the others?
Yes. I tell you right offhand, 5 and 8. 8 is kind of an amusing amendment to me, unfortunately. I don't want to be too negative on it, but it's asking
for approval to do what we've already done in forming a co-op without government intervention. And quite frankly, both 5 and 8 would, we would not participate in redemption centers. And I've made this statement at the Bonneville Task Force. It's not a new statement. But if we were required to run a 24-count system at our stores and run a redemption center model at $18 million a year, you're basically going to double our costs, because we're going to have to keep our bottle rooms open and run a redemption center model. So we're not interested in doing both, so we would not participate in redemption centers, and the model would collapse. We would withdraw our offer to put up 90 and spend nearly $200 million in the next 10 years. Doesn't make any sense. The financial model collapses.
Representative Boone.
Well, go ahead and answer your, or ask your question.
Yeah, just on that point, I want to be really clear who you're speaking for when you say you would be willing to put up $200 million to finance these redemption centers if we don't do this.
The industry as a whole, that's about the price tag you're looking about, over 10 years to buy property, develop it, machinery, also including operational labor costs over a 10-year period. At the end of 10 years, you'll have about $200 million. Now, the money at the front end is smaller, because you only have, if we start out with, we were looking at 4 redemption centers to fund, to see what they do, run them as a beta test, find out where we screw up, find out where we do well. And then once we figure that out, then to proceed, we'd like to look at, you know, 18 to 14 a year, depending on if we can find the property, cut the leases, do all that mechanical stuff, put it all online. So you're looking at, I think, outside, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, since he has to do the mechanics, and we're paying the bill on the redemption center side, is about 10 years on the outside. We'd like to do it in a lot less time than that. What we don't know when we're talking about that money over 10 years is how much red tape do we have to go through to start one of these, so that kind of makes it a difference between a 6 or 7 year model and a 10 year model.
And I think my question was who would be paying for it, because it wasn't my impression that grocery stores were primarily fitting a $200 million bill.
The industry, Mr. Chair, the industry as a whole would pay. Just so clarification, kind of oddly enough, I have Paul sitting here. This is good. John is now both of us, because of the members of OBRC are both retailers who have their own brands of beverages and also your traditional beverage distributors. So it is a true co-op in sense. So that group pays a portion, and then the retailer group itself will pay a portion. We'll pay, we got to figure out what our costs are per volume unit, but every retailer who says, I'm in the redemption center, I'm going to be part of that redemption center, is going to pay a fee to do that in order to run them, because you have to pay for the lights and the leases and the labor and the whole thing.
Okay.
So yeah. It's a whole industry-wide deal. So 5 and 8 would keep us from participating in that. Number 7, I think you've covered well enough. It's nice window dressing, but it's unenforceable. We're going to be working on other ways. We're not sure how. It's a tough nut to crack on the fraud issue of people bringing them over the border. The number 9 amendments that Fawn presented, we oppose. There's agreements that can be made without a change in the law. One of the things that they say is bringing those in unsorted to the redemption center. Well, my retailers pay a fee to have all those things processed to run the redemption center. And what this amendment says, we'll bring them to you, you pay for it, and then give us a nickel for each container. It's not a very and plus, if you bring a truckload into a redemption center, you're gonna choke the redemption center when that truck arrives with a big volume of goods. So this can be done without the law. They can make an agreement with OBRC directly if they want to get some redemption for their dollars. This is something that's just unneeded in our view, and was only going to cost us more money. So not a fair amendment on our standpoint. And as far as the 10 cents go, I think you need to give us some time to see what the redemption rate is. If we start opening up redemption centers, we'd be able to feed you back numbers saying, here's our experience over a year, over 2 years. How far are we drawing people from to the redemption center? You know, how often are they coming? We'd be willing to take, let's say we take 3 stores, we'd baseline those stores, what the redemption rate is, or the numbers. Then look at the redemption centers after a year and say if the redemption's gone up, gone down, and share those numbers with you. I think after you have that kind of data, you'll say, well, maybe 10 cents is needed, maybe it's not. Is it 10 cents that drives it, or is it convenience? Is it the sticky mess? Is it the machines? Is it convenience? What is it? And we'd be able to report that back to you.
And the dash threes seem to get at that by tying the 10 cents to the redemption rate.
To the redemption value. I don't know if you need a bill to do it, but I think 80% is a fair target. I don't take issue with that. We don't have a problem with that.
Anything else?
That's it.
Great. Thank you, Paul. And we can get questions for them both here in a moment.
Mr.
Sorry. Actually, before I do, I realize I skipped
actually,
right over you,
yeah,
Representative.
Yeah, I just had a couple of quick questions for Mr. Gilliam, the other Mr. Gilliam.
Mm-hmm.
First was, what are the barriers that you have, the bureaucratic barriers? And then the second one is, what happens if someone doesn't join the co-op? How do they deal with the product?
Hi, Mr. Chair, Representative Boone. After being here 20 years, thank you for calling me the other Mr. Gilliam. hurts a little bit. No. Tell me your questions again. I was trying to be
I was asking you if that really is his tie. the barriers that you mentioned to actually setting up the redemption centers and answering the question why they aren't here already. I threw that in. I'm learning a lot from him. The second one is, what would happen to someone, a distributor, a member, potential member of the co-op who didn't join?
To the first question, Representative Boone, the barriers right now is just approval. And what I find odd from our view is we currently run 300 bottle rooms that handle 70% of the volume. I've told you that number before. When we open a new store, we don't apply to anyone to run the bottle room. We're just mandated by law to provide the system, and we've made it work for 37 years. We put up a program. We've made a proposal to the task force to get this running. We aren't new players in the market. And while there's a statutory piece there, we've now, since you passed 707, we're heading up on 2 years and can't seem to get the process through the OLCC. So, like I said, we could have started these, a couple months ago, but we can't sign a lease without approval. We don't if they don't approve it for whatever reason. We know convenience has to be a portion of this, and our model is to look at not only convenience, but traffic, arterials, collectors, in and out, parking, where do people go? And we're ready to go. We're just waiting. We don't have an official form to even apply. The second question, if a distributor now is not part of the mix, it does gum up the system. There's nothing to make them go into the system, and we're not advocating that. It does gum up the mess because you have a group of retailers and a group of wholesalers paying for the system to be run. And frankly, a small, very small group of distributors who have not decided to get in, kind of enjoying a free ride on that point. The biggest problem for the retailer is dividing out material and having to save that material for the one distributor who's not participating, and we have to keep that on the dock separate of the other material. So that's kind of the mess we're in, but it's not that it's still early and maybe those will be smoothed out.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Mr. Romaine.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm here representing the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. Just a couple of general comments, and I'm going to go through a few of these amendments. First of all, there was a statement made that the unredeemed deposits in California pay for the redemption centers. That's not exactly correct. There's a massive fee that is imposed upon the beverage industry that pays for the redemption centers. Basically, they're assessed a fee before the product gets into the system. There are no unredeemed deposits because we don't collect, nobody collects deposits in California. It's just redemption. So you bring it back. There's nothing, the system is not our system. It's a different model. You really don't want to go there. Second of all, just a couple of observations. I was doing my taxes with one of my kids a few months ago. I don't know if you've seen the new TurboTax, but one of the income things, it takes you it assumes you're an idiot doing taxes, which is what it should do. And it runs you through different things, and did you have a certain income and stuff. And one of the income categories is bottle deposits. So that's literally in TurboTax now, which I found actually quite comical. The fraud part is very interesting. The 10-cent deposit, the reason it scares us is you don't have fraud problems, huge fraud problems, in most of the bottle bill states. You have some cross-border stuff in the New England states. It's kind of a mix and match and stuff, Iowa. The one place where you have the press reports about huge fraud problems. In fact, there was a 30-some million-dollar fraud dealing with, I believe it was Indiana and Michigan, is Michigan, because it's a 10-cent deposit. That's the problem. There, while we appreciate and really would be fine with something that basically scares you and says your life is going to be taken and you'll be fined all this money and everything if you come across, it may be effective, it may be a deterrent, but the bottom line is that 10-cent deposit becomes a really big magnet for fraud. That's the problem. When we solve the cross-border problem, when we figure out how to do that, it becomes less of a problem, and then the amount of the deposit becomes much more irrelevant. What I plead with you to do in this process is focus on what this bottle bill was designed to do. It does very well what it was designed to do. It was designed to get litter off, to get certain products returned, get them back into to reuse them in one form or another. Actually, the original form was to bring them back and actually have them refilled. But it's not a fundraiser. It's not a fundraiser for everybody's pet project. And once you start getting into it or looking at it as a fundraiser for everybody's pet project, you're going to start getting yourself into the feeding frenzy of I've got my project is better than your project and I want to go with mine. Also, there is no sorting requirement generally for a redemption center. The whole theory of these redemption centers is that you would be able to bring back whatever quantity. So if you go back without any change in the law, somebody has bottle bill product, they can bring it back to a redemption center. They can dump them off, be it 100, 1,000, or 10,000. They can bring them back to a redemption center. A redemption center would do it without any change in the law once we get these things up. The big problem is if you can't tell what kind of container is in that, then how do you stop the fraud? If it comes back crushed, if it comes back cut up, the aluminum or the plastic, how can you tell that that really is a bottle bill container? And that's the problem the industry has with people bringing back a huge amount and saying, trust me, it's fine. Again, please stay on focus on what the bottle bill is designed to do. But to Representative Boone's question about what happens to a distributor who doesn't join OBRC, basically what the amendments would do is say that that distributor now has to pay their deposits into a pot, basically.
Which amendment?
I believe that's the dash 6 or
eight.
Is it dash 8? Dash 8, sorry. Dash 8 amendments. Basically, if you're you basically have to pay in. Now, when we first set up container recovery in the late 80s in Portland, there were a number of holdout distributors. And I think I mentioned this in my earlier testimony. What happened was after about a year or two, those distributors joined up. And the reason they joined up is because the system was worked and they actually wanted to join up. And they caused disruptions in the beginning. They got, you know, sort of taking advantage of the fact that other people were doing things. But eventually the market forced them in and we had pretty much 100% participation. It may be 2 years from now that somebody has to come back to you and say, we need help getting everybody back into this system. But again, it's a new system. It's a new thing we're trying to do. It's a new idea. It's taking the traditional way a bottle bill works and changing it, because bottle bills used to be work on exclusive territories. This is not. If it works, it's great. We can expand it. You can expand it to all these different containers. If it doesn't work, then we have to come back to you and say, if you want to continue it, put it all in exclusive territories or do something different, which is a much more difficult political question for you. So all we ask of you, again, going back to my original testimony, is let's have this discussion about 2 years from now. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is actually for the younger Mr. Gilliam, I believe.
Well, thank you for being confused. Yeah.
Mr. Gilliam, I'm curious, you talked a little bit about cost differences with machine counts versus hand counts. I assume there's a threshold somewhere where there's a transition from a hand count being more cost-effective to a machine count becoming more cost-effective. What's that number? What's the minimum number where it becomes more cost-effective to do a hand count than to maintain the machines?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bailey, you're talking about store level?
Store level, sure.
Store level?
Sort of in
well, I don't have
redemption
exact,
per person.
Exact number for you. You know, hand counting is obviously very labor-intensive. Cause
sure.
We're paying either a union wage with my members or a competitive wage of that nature. And so it's very expensive when you're doing hand counting. When you're talking about convenience to customers that in context of what the DEQ was talking about, it kind of assumes there's this other magic thing we're not doing because we're holding back something. There's just only so many options is. Hand count, machine count, technology, or the redemption center, which would be a combination of machine counting and hand counting, depending on kind of the system you had going in a particular area. There is some good technology that Mr. Anderson can talk about in terms of when you have a redemption center and you have a little more room, the technology that goes along with that, with the machines you can get and how quickly it can sort. There's some stuff out there that does it much quicker than something you could fit into a bottle room. And so it gives us some advantages in going that way.
Sure. I guess my question is more around, so anecdotally, I buy my milk often in these nice little glass jars that I have to bring back, there's no machine that you put them in, but I never have more than one or maybe two. So clearly there's a number at the bottom where you just go through your line with your normal purchase with it, grocer swipes it and enters it, there's almost zero marginal cost on one bottle.
Mm-hmm.
So, and at some point, it does become very labor-intensive, and you do have to switch to those machines. So is there a ballpark in there on sort of where that limit is?
If, Mr. Chair, Representative Bailey, really, if we're going to do the redemption center model, really, I guess the answer is zero. It's not just the labor cost, but it's also the sanitation issue. When we have to store those containers, and I won't give the long version speech, but some of the things that come back in containers, but even things that are just slightly not intentionally soiled, the sanitation issues for us are huge. And so the cost, there's a base cost of having those in the store, because if we don't have machines, and even though we're taking in 20 or 15 or make it 10, make it 5, we're stacking those up until you reach at least a full bag. If you're familiar with the bags, the bags are about 4.5 feet tall. If you don't have machines, you got to fill the bag up. It's worth about $31, roughly. Okay, you have to fill at least one or two of those up before you get collection from a distributor in order to make the trip worthwhile. So we're storing that stuff back in our food area, and that is the bigger problem for us. So we got expense plus sanitation issues. Redemption Center removes both those.
Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sure. Thanks. Let's have Katie Daly. I can't believe you're still here.
I am. I'm here for the long haul. I want to hang around at least 8 more weeks. That's my goal. So, so Chair Cannon, members of the committee, I'm trying to figure out how to sort my thoughts on this because there's been a lot of discussion.
Could you identify yourself, Katie?
Katie Daly, Recycling Advocates, co-chair. So first, I guess I would just like to reiterate our support for the original bill. You know, the goal, I think back in 2007, was to do as much as we can to enhance the existing bottle bill to be as most effective in not only litter prevention, but obviously resource recovery. And there was a lot of testimony then and a lot of testimony now that the system we have is starting to degrade and the numbers are starting to go down. And even with the addition of curbside and all the enhanced recycling opportunities that there are out there, the return rates for the containers are going down. And there's a lot of reasons for that and a lot of evidence that it's a multifaceted problem, not just one problem. And 2184 addresses some of those problems with adding, you know, increased containers under the bottle bill, which is proven to be a better system than just curbside alone. Containers that aren't covered under the bottle bill have a much lower return rate than those that are covered under the bottle bill. And then the fact that everybody can recognize the fact that a nickel in 2009 is not worth the same as a nickel in 1971, and it definitely will probably be more than a nickel in 2017, and I'll get back to that when we look at the amendment. So, you know, the original bill, I think, was a strong bill that didn't solve all the problems, but it moved us in the right direction, and I think it moved us in the direction that the people who sponsored 707 wanted us to go and, you know, wanted the discussion from the task force, and that is what the task force recommended based on a lot of conversations that happened over the two-year period. So looking at the amendments, I think I first want to address the amendments that I think strengthen 2184. And to me, the main amendment that strengthens 2184 is the Dash 5 amendment. And I don't know if it was necessarily totally clear from the testimony earlier, but the point of the Dash 5 amendment is that redemption centers under the current law can be established today. OLCC can open the process up and create redemption centers. And what 2184-5 does is, you know, maintains that some part of the return to retail, which we feel, and I think the evidence shows, is the core of why the bottle bill works. The convenience factor of having tens of thousands of places in Oregon that we can bring back our containers in rural areas, in urban areas, all over the state is why we have such a strong return rate and have always had such a strong return rate. And as soon as you start reducing that and concentrating that, even if it's more, you know, better lit and well staffed, people are still going to not understand where they're supposed to go. If they're coming in from out of town, they're not going to know where to go. There's a lot of different barriers for them being able to, than what we have right now, which is every single convenience store is a place where we can bring back the six-pack that we can buy at every single convenience store. So this 2184-5 does protect a certain amount of that return to retail, which is just absolutely necessary. And I think, you know, as soon as you start creating redemption centers without that, you lose the convenience, and I really think you break the bottle bill. So the Dash 5 strengthens, I think, the system. The Dash 6 and Dash 7 amendments we really are neutral on, but definitely are things that I think DEQ feels are necessary in order to strengthen the existing bottle bill. So I would urge you guys to, you know, think hard about that for what DEQ and OLCC need in order to be able to implement a successful system. So then it becomes kind of the issues of the other amendments that are out there. You know, eliminating liquor, eliminating wine, eliminating both of them, I understand why there's concerns about adding those. There's a lot, you know, they were presented in the first day of testimony. But I do want to remember some of the arguments of why it's important to have those products in the list. Glass is a problem with curbside recycling, and glass isn't, or curbside recycling isn't available to everybody throughout the state. There are a lot of people who don't have curbside available to them. Adding liquor and wine will solve a lot of the problems with curbside and provide a better source product, a source material for the recyclers that are already existing in Oregon by making sure that the colors are separated, which they aren't curbside, and just having a higher product of return recycled material. So I would like you guys to think, you know, long and hard before backing off on wine and liquor, because I think it is an important addition to the bottle bill. And especially remember my points from the first day of testimony that the unredeemed deposits for liquor would come back to the state. So there is kind of the revenue thought there to think about when you're thinking about liquor bottles. Now, as far as the 10 cents is concerned, you know, I think we're not going to fall on our sword on moving the 10 cents from 2011 to 2013. Of course, we can see advantages of doing something all at one time if you're going to expand the number of the types of beverages that are covered in 2013. It makes sense maybe to move the 10 cents to 2013. It also makes sense to a certain extent to tie the 10 cent to that 80%, to not meeting the 80% goal. The problem we have is the date that that gets pushed out to. The 80% goal reporting doesn't happen till 2015, and then raising it to 10 cents doesn't happen to 2017. And I hate to take advantage of this pregnancy, but two people today said your kids will be in the first grade or past the first grade if that's what happens. That's a long time from now to go up to second grade to go up to 5 cents from 5 cents. So we would really like to see that nickel, which, you know, if you look at the history of the bottle bill, that eroding in value is really why, one of the main contributors to why the numbers are going down. And then finally, I guess, I would like to address the Dash 8 amendment with the redemption centers. We don't have a position on this necessarily right away. We'd like to think about it a little bit more, but we definitely would not support anything that would establish redemption centers without keeping the return to retail component of, you know, and I think 24 containers is the absolutely bare minimum. That was picked because it was too, I don't know, you know, 212 packs, and people usually don't buy much more than that, but it really is a low number, even for the average consumer who likes to store things and take stuff at one time to their grocery store. 24 is a pretty low number. And I'd also like to talk about a little bit Mr. Gilliam's comments. I mean, I do think the machines, the container recovery machines, have contributed to lowering the bottle bill return rates. You know, I've been around for 41 years in this state, so for the whole time of the bottle bill, and it's a lot easier to hand your cans over to somebody and have them sort them, go away and go shopping, come back and get your slip that says how much money that you've got, than it is to stand there at the machines to only have the ones work where the barcode can be read, which, you know, for litter control, that's not exactly the situation when you get crushed cans on the side. If that really was the original goal of the bottle bill, I remember collecting cans that had been crushed all over the, you know, the side of the road, and to have a lot of them spit out and not recycled at all, when that's your intent, is you're trying to recycle them, to have them be sticky, to have them be not well lit, and to have broken machines. All those are complaints that we hear constantly about the machines, that you don't hear about a human taking your container. So, you know, not that the machines, I think, are the culprit here, but I think that they contribute to the problems as well. And so any authority that the bill can do to strengthen the return system as it is, I think, is important. And, you know, I don't know. We need to keep return to retail also just to make sure that the system is as strong as it is right now and doesn't weaken under any of these amendments.
Thanks very much. Are there any questions? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, the date of when the nickel to a 10 cents, and whether it's an arbitrary year or whether it's related to some benchmark, and I'm sympathetic to the argument that the number of pennies that it is a means, not an end, right? We're not charging a certain amount of money because we want to charge a certain amount of money. We're trying to do it so people turn their cans back in. And therefore, tying it to outcomes is a sensible proposal.
Mm-hmm.
I share a concern that sort of the second grade problem, to give due credit to my colleague, Representative Bailey, as to the prediction of what grade your children will be, it has something to do with their academic performance and intelligence. But everybody here,
given the genetic stock, I'm sure we'll be fine.
Yes, he was thinking, I think they might be in fifth grade, or, you know,
okay,
might rocket ahead. But at some point, I mean, $130 for a big bag, right? And $130 for a big bag in the 70s was like $650 now. Because the 5 cents is not like 26 cents. And $650, you know, in my neighborhood, in some place not too far away, that's a month of rent.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, okay, $130 ain't a month of rent. $130 is, you know, if you do that 3 times, you can buy yourself a PSP. Right? And I have one. it's off the record. Handheld video game machine that's really good for airplane trips. And so I am concerned at some point it just doesn't pass. It just makes me feel that we're in the, well, we just don't want anything to happen stage. So my question is, can we imagine any benchmark in advance? Okay, The other concern, however, if we move the 2016 date to 2013 or 2011 or 2000 whatever, is that, well, we just won't have time to hit it. That's not very fair. You can't make us do a blank year because we won't have time to hit it. Is there any benchmark that might be sensible to make sure what we're doing is not merely putting it off and feet of clay for sake of feet of clay, but instead giving honest, you know, due to sensible planning and argument? Can you imagine any intermediate step?
Representative Cannon, Representative Smith, we've thought about it. I mean, you know, because I think that you're thinking the way we are, that, you know, it does make sense to try to have something built into statute to try to get over the 80% goal if we don't meet it. And there's a lot of different solutions that we can lay out that would potentially get us there. But it is hard to do under the timelines that we have here. I mean, I think the only scenario would be if 2011 was the date when we started doing things and were able to then monitor and take measurements and then have things kick in earlier. Other than that, I don't see anything with the statute, with 2184 as written. There's nothing else I can imagine that can get us there earlier without just mandating the 10 cents.
Thank you.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, mine are 16, 19, and 23, and it goes like that. But you've heard that before. And you can't experience it. I mean, you can't know it till you experience it. I wanted to ask you, you know, I understand the hesitation or the fear of the unknown and the discomfort with change, but are most of your comments at the beginning about what will happen if we alter the system from in-store to redemption based on your observations, I'm sure, out of experience, or any other kind of, do we have comparative data or other states that make you feel that it's warranted?
Yeah, Representative Cannon, Representative Gilliam, you know, I would like to have evidence in front of you right here to be able to answer that question, and I don't. I do know that under the California system, before they even got to the point where they are right now with the number of redemption centers that they have, they weren't seeing the return rates that we were seeing in Oregon. And I think, you know, but a lot of it is a sense of, you know, the reason it works is because it is so, there's no thinking that has to be done on the part of the consumer on where they need to bring things back. They just know their 7-Eleven down the street will take it, their Safeway will take it, every place will take it. It's not a thought problem. They don't have to call the Metro hotline to find out where mm-hmm. their redemption center is. That extra step is always a barrier to doing what I think people want to do, but may not have the time or inclination to do.
Well, I don't agree, but that's a reasonable answer. In regard to the machines and the problems versus labor-intensive, I want to be sure I understand your position. My first job was a box boy at Albertsons mm-hmm. on Southeast 82nd in Portland, and that was one of my main jobs, was counting. Labor intensity is not your goal. I mean, you agree if, and I agree, it's wonderful, if you have time when you're shopping, here, count my bottles and you come back and get them. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a reasonable goal, to go to a labor-intensive kind of situation?
Chair Cannon, Representative Gilliam, I understand that the grocers have, invested a lot of time and effort into the systems that they have, and that having a handheld counted system is a labor-intensive system. But I was just countering the comments that your brother made earlier, that consumers are happier with the machines than they are with the hand-counting system. I would disagree with that. I think consumers would prefer the hand-count system. It's inside. It's in a well-lit, safe place, and somebody else is doing the sorting for them. They don't have to do it. So that was what I was countering with.
And one last follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. We may disagree on that, but I do appreciate your challenging him. I know we're talking about amendments to 2184, but just if you would, in a sort of vision of the future of Oregon and recycling, recognizing, you know, how important the bottle bill has been. It's an icon in our recycling history. Do you have a vision for recycling that doesn't include the bottle bill, that
goes to curbside or something like that? Or will the bottle bill, in your view, always be part of the vision?
Chair Cannon, Representative Gilliam. My vision for recycling in Oregon, that Oregon's a model for a national system that then eliminates a lot of the problems like the cross-border problems and things like that, and that we can actually track then, the deposit nationally and use that to incent better resource recovery of our natural resources, which we aren't doing nationally at all.
Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Katie.
Great. Thank you.
Appreciate it. I am going to, seeing no one further signed up to testify, I'm going to close a public hearing on House Bill 2184 and open a work session on House Bill 84. Members, we will not be able to move this bill to the floor today. We do not have a fiscal statement that reflects any of the amendments which we might proceed to adopt. We do, in my view, need more time to work with the sixes, eights, and nines in particular. However, I would be open to motions and discussions on any of the other amendments. Remind the public and remind my colleagues that we have had now three public hearings on this bill. I think we've spent more time with it than any other this session, which I think, given the important place in our history, as my colleague here said, the bottle bill as an icon in our recycling history, I think it's important that we've taken this much time for deliberation and testimony on the bill. It is possible to adopt some amendments into the bill at this point, then go back to fiscal for a revised statement and deal with the final motions on the bill in a later work session. And Representative Barnhart?
Now I get the point you're making. Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if you indicate that some of these amendments need further work. Is it your intention to include the substance of some of them in the final bill?
I think that is perhaps something that we could discuss during this work session as well. I certainly would be interested in feedback on whether there is merit to the approach taken in the dash sixes, eights, and nines. Based on what I have heard today, I think that they would require some additional time and some additional drafting before we are prepared to move them into the bill. But we could do that at a later work session if it was our intent to move that direction.
And what you're hoping to do with other amendments is to get a revised fiscal statement?
Yes, to begin the process of getting a revised fiscal statement. My understanding from the speaker is that fiscal will appreciate any guidance we can give them with respect to the direction we intend to take the bill. What I would be able to say at the conclusion of this work session is, look, we've adopted these one or two or three or four amendments into the bill. We are working and anticipate a final amendment, or not, that will look like or may be a dash 6, 8, or 9, and then we intend to move the bill to the floor. I'm also interested in working on this today, partly because of the calendar that we're facing. I think we've had 70 bills referred to this committee in the last week, and given the few minutes that we have today to discuss the bill and these proposed amendments, I want to take advantage of this, knowing that it's going to be difficult to squeeze in work sessions in subsequent weeks.
The reason I asked the question is that my normal preference would be to work the bill in one session when mm-hmm. we have all the amendments in front of us. But given the point you made, it might make sense to get the sense of the committee by adopting one or more of the other amendments, if that's appropriate. And I'll defer to other members of the committee to make motions.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Representative Smith.
I'll try one that sounded relatively without significant testified objection, the dash sevens, which might only which prohibits redemption of containers purchased out of state, which again might be of limited deterrence. I think it would be of some deterrence, at least for the major ne'er-do-wells. So I would move that amendment to House Bill 2184 and see what happens.
Okay, Representative Smith, thank you. Moves the dash seven amendments dated 317 to House Bill 2184. Is there discussion? Representative Bealey.
Mr. Chair, I'd be curious just to hear thoughts. I'm trying to remember all the good testimony that we had, but did we come to a conclusion about probability of enforcement and how that would work?
Representative Benz had some questions related to this proposed amendment. Do you have any comments?
On the amendment?
On the dash sevens.
Well, I have a couple of comments, Mr. Chair. The first, it's difficult for me to address these amendments in a vacuum, and I just have a difficult time doing something this important piecemeal because each one of these has an impact on the entire picture. So I just have a really tough time addressing it in pieces. It's a big deal and complex, and one part affects the other. So there's my general remark. A specific remark as to the redemption issue is that it needs to be resolved because, indeed, I think the bottle bill has functioned wonderfully. It's been a wonderful thing for the state, and it would be terrifically unfortunate to build on a situation that already is dangerous for it, and that is that the people are coming across the border as in droves. I am understating it, and so unless we get a fix on it, and I don't know if you must have discussed in your lengthy task force meetings ideas about marking cans and marking items and somehow being able to identify them, so there was some hope of stopping that deluge of those invaders from these other states, because it has a terrifically negative impact not only on distributors but on the dealers, the stores. And so this is not a fix. And I was too sharp, I think, in my questioning of the gentleman who had come up with the proposal, because I know that there was an attempt, and I appreciate that. But it won't work. And so without something that has more chance of working, I would be negative on it.
Okay. Representative Smith?
I just want to say I don't think this is merely window dressing. And I'll give you my impression of why I think it's smart. I liken it to the FBI warning on a DVD, which I don't think prohibits many people, and now technology might prohibit you, but back when it was VCR days, I don't know if that prohibited anybody from making another copy so they could share it with their, well, let's say, brother. But I do think it made it very unlikely that you would take a tape to then make many copies to have a DVD store. So I don't think this would do much to I was in Seattle and I bought a Coke and I turned it back in here. I don't think it stops that, but I do think that it would provide significant deterrence to people who were habitual and large offenders, if and only because it would provide a reminder to folks in the private sector that they had enforcement possibility and could have a little camera in there and they could have it and could decide to go after a private right of action if they wanted to hold somebody, for example. I think it would have a deterrence effect. Of course, it's an empirical question, but I'm also interested that even if this wouldn't mean we have to pass the bill, but even the folks who don't like the bill, I don't think we said this would be bad. Right, the reason I picked that one is hope it's the most innocuous, and unlike some of the others that might really tug at all the others. This doesn't mean that the bill's good and we fixed it, and everybody reserves the right to vote no on the substance of the bill overall. But I don't think this makes the bill, significantly worse. I would hope from many people's perspective.
Any additional comments, Representative Gilliam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think you know this, but I just want to, before I say anything more about the bill, I have a great deal of respect for you and for Vice Chair Smith because we've talked about this. I appreciate you know that we don't see this the same way, but I think we both want the best for our state. So I have a great deal of respect. I say this with respect. On seven, seven is of the list is of least concern to me until I listen to Representative Benz, but I think that's because I don't represent a community like Ontario. So I will listen to that. I just want to make one overall comment about the bill, and I won't comment any more today. You've got a half an hour.
You can comment on other amendments when we bring them up.
I could save you a lot of time, and I'll just comment now on the bill and not comment further. But I'm not trying to be flip, but it did pop in my mind to make the fortune cookie speech. And that is, the other day we were at a Chinese restaurant and somebody, I don't know if you've all played this game where you read the fortune and then you say something at the end, which doesn't need to be repeated now. And what I would say at the end, Representative Smith's getting very nervous, is in Dollar. This economy. And so when DEQ comes up and says we hardly know what the impact of water bottles are, yet the system has a big problem. I would add the phrase, and it's in this economy. Just like I would say, originally it was a litter bill, and now bottle deposits appear on TurboTax. In the context, think of it in this economy. And lastly, I guess I would add, you know, I felt that 707 was a really, it was bloody, it was very dramatic, it was a behemoth policy, a move to expansion, and that was in that economy, and now we are in this economy. So for me, I think we've pushed our retailers, and I think that we ought to give it a rest, and lastly, because we are in this economy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for those comments. Any further discussion on the Dash 7s? Representative Boone.
We'll weigh in, too. You know, having just seen these, I got these last night, and I'm concerned about the Dash 7s for the reasons that Representative Bentz brought up also. And I get it. I mean, I understand why they'd want to do it, but the unsureness of it is a little disturbing. What I'd really like to see is redemption centers and recycling and get everybody so that you can choose either to bring them back or not. But this is going a little, until we get either one or the other or however we're going to do this, I think it adds a little angst on my part in that one.
Any other?
Mr. Chair, I have comments.
Mr. Chair.
I would like to withdraw my motion. Yes. I would like to withdraw my motion on the Dash 7s. I have been deeply persuaded by my colleagues about the real problems the Dash 7 amendments offer, and I think that the evil doing that we would engage by passing those is just far more than I can stomach. So I want to withdraw that amendment for now.
All right. We will not be taking up the Dash 7. We'll not be voting on the Dash 7s today. Any further discussion or motions? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good Vice Chair Smith stuck his neck out on one. Being another new member, I'll stick my neck out on another one that's even more controversial. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 5 amendment to House Bill 2184. And can I comment on that now, or do I have to wait?
Let me restate that Representative Bailey has moved the Dash 5 amendment to House Bill 2184. Discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand the discussion that's been had, and I appreciate the testimony on the Dash 5 amendment. One of the interesting things about the bottle bill that's somewhat different than other bills that I've worked on or discussed in other committees, whether that's urban renewal or corporate taxation, is that a lot of this comes down to what would I do and what would I want and what do I do in my everyday life. To me, it seems appropriate to retain an ability to take a few bottles and cans back to the grocery store and to retain that convenience. That may mean moving to a hand count system. There may be a level in there in which that does not impose significant costs. But I think having only the ability to move to a redemption center could potentially hurt this bill in ways that we, I think, as a committee, would need to have a much larger discussion about. So I think this is a reasonably small amount, and I think it would preserve the intent and the convenience for the average citizen.
Is there further discussion? I'll make a comment on the Dash 5s. I think it is critical that we consider consumer convenience. Clearly, you know, the bottle bill has worked successfully in part, in large part, I would say, because of the opportunity it gives folks to take their cans and bottles back to redemption centers, back to grocery stores at the same trip as they're buying new groceries. They use that token to reduce the final cost of their shopping trip, and they're able to take care of that in one trip. This relates to a question that's pretty hypothetical at this point, the establishment of redemption centers, none of which exist in the state right now. The question is, if one were to establish a redemption center at some point down the line, would a participating grocery store have to continue to take back any level of product? This amendment proposes that, yes, they would. They would have a significantly reduced requirement for take-back. Instead of 144 containers per day, they would be required to accept just 24 containers per day. We've heard their testimony. We've also heard in previous hearings from the co-op and their representatives, and John Anderson, who has spoken about the plan to develop these redemption centers. We expect that those redemption centers would be paid for primarily from the unredeemed, the value of unredeemed deposits. And, it's my sort of considered view of this that we can find a way to kind of make this work, and that the industry, which has so worked so hard and so generously, frankly, to make this the 707 expansion work, can get there on distributions or redemption centers, even with this minimal 24 can take back requirement for local retailers. So that's my view on the dash fives. Is there any further discussion, Representative Boone?
Just a point of clarification then. Is this, and I hope I didn't miss it, but it's getting late. If they take back these up to 24 cans, do they do it in a back room, or do they do it at the thing, or at the checkout, or, and are they given, if they do it in a back room, just a little ticket that says you get a dollar back or whatever, a dollar 15 or whatever it is, and I can't even do the math. Or do they, how does that work?
I believe, and I don't know if Bob is still here. Bob, do you want to come up and address how this might work under this approach? My expectation, Representative Boone, and my understanding is that they would be they would have the same options that they do today about how they take back that product. It could be
either a machine.
It could be a machine outside, meaning they wouldn't have to invest in new labor. They would continue to operate the equipment that they've had, or through some other mechanism. But I want to let you speak to
Mr. Chair. Time. You answered the question.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Will the clerk please call the roll?
And the vote is on the dash.
The dash fives. Yep.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Bent?
No.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone?
No.
Chair Cohen?
Aye. And the motion carries. I would entertain any other motions. Representative
Chair,
Boone?
Chair, I would move the dash. Can I do two?
Why don't we take them one at a time?
Okay. The dash three.
Okay, this is hard enough. Doing them one at a time. Representative Boone moves the dash three amendments to House Bill 2184. And discussion on this amendment, which would trigger that 10-cent increase only if the beverage return rate does not hit 80%, and that determination will not be made until after 2015, or that determination will be made in 2015, which is why we got into the 10-cent possibility starting in 2016 or 17. Representative Barnhart.
May I inquire where that 2015 is? I don't see it in here, and it may just be that I'm not looking. But.
Yeah, and I can't answer that question confidently. It's in the underlying bill. So House Bill 2184, it's in Section 1, Sub 1 of 2184, which is then referenced by the Dash 3 amendments in line 7 and 8.
Ah, thank you. I was just not seeing it.
Good question.
And now I do see it. Thank you, sir.
Any other discussion related to the dash threes? I would comment that Representative Smith, I think, brought up an important question when we had Katie Daly here, the timing on this. It does push this 10 cents out potentially to, at the soonest, 2016 or 2017, and that seems a long way off. And I think Ms. Daly's answer was sort of my answer to that. It's hard to see under the structure of this bill how you move that forward, because product expansion, if we pass this bill, if this bill becomes law, product expansion itself doesn't happen until 2013. Then you need time to monitor the redemption rate, and then you move the next step then is to move to 10 cents. So while I'm not entirely satisfied that 2017 is early enough to be considering the increase to 10 cents, it's hard to see how you get there any sooner, if, as long as you want to tie it to the redemption rate, which I think really is the approach to take. The 10 cents, as someone else put it, is a means to an end, not an end in itself, and it makes a good deal of sense to deal with this after we've determined what our redemption rate is and whether or not it's meeting the target. Any other discussion on the dash threes? If not, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative
Boone?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gillen?
Nope.
Chair Keene?
Aye. Motion carries. Any other motions?
Well, Mr. Chair, trying to get my friend here to join me. Move the dash. I want to get the right one. Tens for 2184.
Okay, Representative Boone moves the dash 10 amendments to House Bill 2184. And committee, just to review, this would alter the definition of beverage for product expansion. It would remove distilled liquor and wine from that list. And we heard a lot of testimony on this issue in our first two public hearings, and a significant amount of opposition to the inclusion of wine and liquor on these on the list for several different reasons. We didn't hear as much about it today, which was sort of per my request, but it's certainly something we heard a lot about in previous testimony. Any discussion of this?
Well, Mr. Chair,
yep.
I would just note it's a little confusing until you look at the two together, but I realize that the language in the bill and the language in the amendment are identical, except that in the amendment, the words distilled liquor and wine do not appear. Otherwise, I think they're the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so adopting this amendment has the effect of removing distilled liquor bottles and wine bottles from the bill. Have I got it right?
That is correct.
Thank you.
That is
now I understand, and I also understand the confusion that at least one of the witnesses had over what the amendment does. It now makes sense, and it didn't before.
Any other discussion on the dash tens?
Yeah.
Representative Smith.
I just want to speak to the record that by the legislative council, it seems we'll have to reconcile what the sum of the amendments we do, if dash 10s are essentially an entire, well, almost, you know, entirely newly drafted bill with the exception of two words, that'll have to also include the two things we just passed, lest we've just adopted essentially a new bill that didn't include the dash 3s and dash 5s.
Do you want to speak to that at all, Beth?
Yes. The dash 10 amendments only the gut and stuff, one section of the bill, section 2. So the other sections, the other amendments that you've adopted, the dash 3 and the dash 5, let me check real quick.
That's right.
Deal with different sections of the bill. So
won't matter.
It won't matter.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Yes, Representative.
It is unfortunate that we're approaching it in this fashion, because there are certain of these portions that might be worthy of support. But by approaching it this way, I am not sure, notwithstanding Beth's clarification, exactly what we're doing, because I, for one, would be happy to reduce the bill and thus the economic impact upon those who may be burdened with it. But I'm not sure exactly what I'm voting for, and so until I am, I'll have to be a no vote. So that's where I am on this. That's where I've been on, and probably won't be on all the amendments, as I indicated earlier.
It's a, you know, it's a process issue that certainly I've faced before in committees, not a committee I've chaired, but certainly as a member of a committee, where we have amendments that deal with different sections of a bill that are considered simultaneously. The alternative to it, I mean, and the reason we had these drafted as separate amendments is because the alternative would appear to be to present a big package that wouldn't offer committee members the ability to deliberate separately over each provision. I've seen that method too, and my opinion was that that method leaves a greater opportunity for imprint by the chair or the drafter of the amendment and less opportunity for considered deliberation and voting by members of the committee on each separate amendment. You sort of have an all or nothing option. I wanted to present these as separate amendments in order to give the committee the opportunity to express its support for some, but opposition to others. And so I understand your concern, particularly when you're voting on an amendment that was drafted in such a way that it sort of replicates much of the bill. It seems to me there would have been a much simpler way to draft the ones, twos, and tens that just deleted a word rather than reinserted large provisions of the bill. But I hope you understand that my intention and my assurance from committee staff is that this gives us the chance to deliberate and vote separately on different provisions. And this one, the dash tens, would have the effect of removing liquor and wine from the expansion list.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for that explanation. I do appreciate it. I think what I'm having difficulty with is the thought that we are removing something from a bill that we've not yet adopted, and thus I'm not sure what we're taking away. I'm not sure what we're subtracting from. A good example would be if you look at the Dash 10 Amendment, and as you just pointed out, Section D has sports drinks, coffee, tea, juice, and so forth. By voting for this amendment, is that in any way involved? In other words, am I implicitly saying, yes, I'm okay with sports drinks, coffee, tea, juice, and so forth, but I'm not okay with the other two that we are taking out?
My approach to this, and I'd be interested to hear from other committee members, is I would hold the amendment up against the bill and say, what's the difference between these two? And in this case, the difference is the absence of the words wine and liquor from that product list. And so the amendment would... voting for the amendment, my view is that voting for the amendment would express a preference for a bill that does not include wine and liquor on the expansion list. Of course, we'll have the opportunity, not today, but at our next work session, to express our view of that kind of final package.
Mr. Chair, thank you again for that explanation, and it may well be that I could vote for a motion of this nature, but then vote against the bill. As long as that is understood.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's certainly the case for any amendment we consider here. Representative Jensen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would be prepared to vote yes on this amendment with the recognition, as you just indicated, it has nothing to do with any possible future vote on the bill or any other amendments that might appear. Relationship.
I do accept that, and I apologize for not making that clearer to begin with. My view is that each of these should be considered in sort of, do they improve the bill or make the bill worse? Vote accordingly, knowing that we have not yet seen the final bill. We may have in a next work session an additional amendment to consider, and certainly I don't take any of these votes as expressions of support or opposition to the final contents of the bill.
Mr. Chair, I would like to point out that I don't think there was any implication that you hadn't on my part in doing that. I'm simply speaking for the record on this sort of thing. I had already understood what you were, you know, this. I just wanted it on the tape in the event that somewhere or another I have to do something with it.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Any other discussion on the
defense? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out this by no means excuses anyone from recycling your wine and liquor bottles. You still have to do that.
Good point.
Absolutely. Thank you, Representative Bailey.
Especially you, Gillian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a little bit of confusion about this particular amendment simply because we have a long list of beverages that are included here, and I'm sure that there are merits and otherwise with including each of them. I also think that if we're moving towards a distributor-based model, and if we're still retaining a small amount to return to retail, which apparently we are, then it may make sense to think about the different lists in terms of those that new context of the ability to perhaps do something by hand or by machine and to take something to a redemption center. So I'm not there yet on this amendment.
Thank you for those comments, Representative Bailey. Representative Gideon.
I promised I wouldn't speak, and I apologize, Mr. Chair, but our previous testifier from Recycle Advocates, I'm sorry, I forgot. I know this isn't what she meant, but she urged us not to back off of wine and liquor, and I want to assure as this committee goes on and the session goes on that we won't.
Mr. Chair, I can assure you that the more that Representative Gilliam speaks, the less I'm going to back off the wine and liquor.
Speak for all of us.
Withdrawn.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the Dash 10? If not, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
No.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
Aye.
Representative
Boone?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
No.
Chair
Kennedy? Aye. Motion carries. With that, we certainly don't need to deal with dash ones or twos or fours, since those relate to subjects that we have already discussed. We had the motion withdrawn on dash sevens. The six, eights, and nines may reemerge in a second work session or may not. I commit to continuing to try to keep the process on this bill, as well as any other subsequent and potentially difficult bills that we work, as open as possible. So please feel free to ask me where you think we're headed with these things, and we will continue to try to get any additional amendments out to committee and to the public as soon as possible. I understand the significance of what we're doing here to a very important piece of Oregon law. So thank you, committee, for your hard work today. And with that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2184 and close the committee hearing.